Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, listening audience. Thank you for tuning in to Talk Straight and being a part of a national dialogue designed for proactive change. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. I'm grateful again to engage each and every one of you in very important conversation. I need your help as I endeavor to take this message and the conversation we share on air to targeted cities and urban areas across America with the hope and desire to improve the quality of lives by engaging communities and proactive strategies. You can be of great help by going to our webpage, www.bfcinstitute.com. Click on the donation tab or the contact us tab and find ways that you can assist us by either purchasing our items or just making a donation on our secure PayPal site. If you are a business or someone who would like to make a corporate level contribution and you would like more information, please give me a call at 615-498-4669 or send me an email at bfcinstitute@gmail.com. That's bfcinstitute@gmail.com, or give us a call at 615-498-4669. We are glad to share with you and provide you all the necessary information to help you make the decision to support us in our traveling lecture series.
Well, greetings and welcome to another episode of Talk Straight. It's your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. It's been a minute since we've seen you. As you may not know, or you may know, most of you do anyway, we've changed our schedule a little bit in terms of my presence. On Tuesday nights, we'll be facilitating our discussion, and we still anticipate on Thursday nights, Mr. Ben Shelton, our resident host will be in. Pastor Ricky Waller may be with us from time to time as well. He's been with us over the last 5 years. Still keep him in your prayers as he recovers and get well and get healthier. But nonetheless, you're listening to Talk Straight, and it's your host, Reverend Dockery. Now, when we consider the socioeconomic plight of certainly what I consider the most challenged in urban American neighborhoods, communities, there can be no doubt that the factors are great that affect them and by the circumstances, and leaving many to believe that it's beyond their control. There's argument about whether or not it's out of their control, but often the response to trouble is to laugh. You know, sometimes it helps to keep you from crying. However, in reality, there's absolutely nothing funny about the despair and the challenge, the trouble that many face, particularly throughout urban America. As I said, when you face these things, the tendency is to just kind of laugh and shrug it off, you know. It's a way of demonstrating a stoic front, you know, stoicism. That's one of the philosophical positions, that when you have hard times, you don't let it get the best of you. You stand strong and you shrug it off, you laugh it off. So tonight we're going to talk from the topic, when the last laugh is on me. When the last laugh is on me. That's what we want to talk about. That will be our central theme for tonight. When circumstances are going on and people are having fun and some want to speak to the parodies of life and to shrug off and make fun of it, to crack a joke, and the laugh is on you, how does it make you feel? How does it make you feel when others are being entertained by your situation, your circumstances. Some would tell you that, hey, I want to be your friend. I want to help you. And actually, they're profiting off of your demise. Now, some things we need, you can't avoid them, and somebody's going to provide where there's a need and there's money exchange in reference to it. I'm not really speaking about that, but I'm speaking in particular some of the social ills that are faced by young people and their families, that if we change our construct of motivation and encouragement in society such that we encourage responsible fatherhood, we can end a lot of the programs and services that are out there. You know, I realize somebody's getting the last laugh on you, and that's where I'm going with this. And that's the motivation for them not wanting to change things, because they're making good money. But the laugh is on you. See, the brothers were in order, and they were taking care of the children that they helped progenate as fathers. A lot of these things we wouldn't need. A lot of spending and money and what have you wouldn't need. We empower them to be men. So that's what we're going to talk about tonight. 657-383-0944. 657-383-0944. That is the number to call. Do you all know that this is already November the 9th, Tuesday night, November 9th, 2021? almost gone, man. Tanya. But you're here on Talk Straight with your host, Reverend Dockery. And I want to encourage you and invite you to give us a call here, 657-383-0944. That is the number to call in the studio right now. If you're following us on Facebook Live and you'd like to chime in, you don't necessarily have to call in. We encourage you to do so, but you can post a question and or comment in the discussion box there, and we'll be happy to accordingly respond to you. You understand? And so, but we appreciate, again, each of you being with us, those that will come, those that are here. Let's get through a little brief monologue, and then I ask symbolically a group to join us here. You know, the late Cuba Gooding Sr. Y'all know what I'm talking about. We'll get to it. Just hold on. But first, let's get to the text, to the biblical text. Nehemiah, the 8th chapter, verses 9 and 10 reads like this. Well, let's just look at verse 10 largely. Then he said unto them, go your way, eat the fat, and drink the sweet, and send portions unto them for whom nothing is prepared. For this day is holy unto our Lord. Neither be ye sorrow, for the joy of the Lord is your strength. Now in this text, you might can hear that there's instruction on how to keep yourself from being sad with a low head. The motivation here is that no matter what's happening, what's coming, what's going, the joy of the Lord is your strength. And if you find it in them, you know, go on about your, handle your business. Nobody said don't take care of your business. By all means, please do that. But know that when you're living life and you're going through your circumstances, that finding joy in Jehovah, the eternal, everlasting creator of the universe, that's where your strength is. So you didn't get here by yourself. And that's where your strength is that brought you here, that will keep you and carry you. I didn't come to preach, but I know I'm right about it. All right? Nehemiah 8 and 10, I just read for your hearing. When we talk about a joke, it's a display of humor. And that's okay. Nothing wrong with that. You know, people use words and well-defined narratives. good comedians know how to take real life events and circumstances that everybody can identify with and structure their words and lyrics in a way that people can find humor in them. Crack a joke, they make you laugh, right? And you're not supposed to really take it seriously per se, you know what I mean? But it's to make you laugh. The funny thing about it is when you're speaking from the perils of life, you know, doggone, that's for real. All of us have been through that, but it's so funny. And it's okay if we can use a little self-deprivation, you know, when you're able to laugh at yourself, it makes it much easier on you. You understand what I'm saying? When you're not so uptight that you can't even look at yourself and say, hey, okay, I can do better, and that's fun. That's really funny when you think about it. There's a specific punchline, though, that most comedians use when the audience in front of them and they become aware of the story that contains the second conflicting meaning. And that's really what makes it funny. You go and you tell the story, and then you say, well, you know what? Satire is used to kind of make light of things. And there's some people, for instance, that say, we don't need the police, right? And we hate the police. But then when they get robbed or they get assaulted, first thing they do is call the police. You know, one satiric position is to say, well, you take care of yourself. You defend yourself then. You don't need the police. You got all the answers. You can fix it. Then take care of yourself. Of course, that's not the appropriate thing to do, but that's an example of what we're talking about here. You know, but when people are laughing and things are funny and they're frolicking, and you look up and you say, man, who are they laughing at? Oh, they're laughing about me. I don't want the last laugh to be on me. Much like a joke, when you look at a parody, it's an imitation, you see, of a particular expression that writers and artists use in various genres, right? They deliberately exaggerate things for comedic effect. They deliberately expand the idea of things and use hyperbole just so that they can make you laugh, right? It's an imitation of what in really ways is real, but it's stretched to unbelievability. When the laugh, beloved, is on you, what do you do? What do you do? When economically, all of us are struggling now. You know, we got a situation where supply chain is rough. There are a lot of things we can't get hold of. And when you go to the grocery store, you realize the prices of milk, prices of eggs, bread, butter, fruit, the basic things, right, that you eat, that went up. And there you are. Man, I was just making enough to get what I need to keep my family going and keep me afloat. And here we are now. Shoot, things done went up on us. What am I going to do? What am I going to do? And that begs that question. You know, somebody trying to be funny here. And I'm not liking the joke here. And I don't like the fact that it looked like I'm the one that everybody else who's prospering and doing well, I'm the one that the brunt of the joke is on. You know what I mean? Well, what's up with that? Why me? Get somebody else, man. You know, make somebody else the butt of the joke. I can understand someone who would take that position. So what I like to do is I like to share this with you. And this group that Cuba Gooding Jr. sang with, some of y'all may be old enough to remember them. They call themselves The Main Ingredients. A pretty good song. Two decades ago. that really said something. And essentially, it's somewhat related to what we're talking about here, when the last laugh is on me. Now, beloved, we all have, I'm convinced, done something that we perhaps was not proud of or that we would consider to be a mistake. You know what I mean? Something that might cause someone to laugh at us. Some little silly thing. Maybe not with deliberate intentions to be nefarious, to be destructive, even sometimes when we are, and we hurt ourselves more than everybody else, right? But what they're saying is we all play the motley fool sometimes. I would argue mostly unintentionally, but we play it sometimes. Listen to them just for a second. 657-383-0900. That's the number to call. You're listening to Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. Give us a call here, 657-383-0944. We'd love to have you. Now by ourselves, but if you join us, simply call 657-383-0944 or post out a question or comment. We'll be happy to respond there accordingly. You're listening to Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. We go right back to the phone line, and I got my good brother on with me from Selma, Alabama. Don, I know you're familiar with the main ingredient, thanks.
Oh, yeah, man. That was back in the day, Mr. Dockery.
That's your day, ain't it? That's your day, ain't it?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
What we've been talking about is how life sometimes can just be funny, man. You can go through things, and the best way to deal with them is to laugh to keep from crying. You know what I mean? But then, Don, there too often we look around and we see people profiting off of our situations and others being amused or entertained by it. It never ceases to amaze me how when you start talking about somebody that's poverty ridden or even you've heard me use urban American and what have you, those tend to allude to certain things, right? The suggestion or the assumption is that you're blind, crippled, and you're crazy, and you don't have a clue. But that's not true, is it? And that's where the laugh comes. Our topic is when the last laugh is on me. That's what we're talking about, Don. When the last laugh is on me. I don't want it to be on me, Don. How about you? Don?
Yeah, it's a good topic, Mr. Doctor, you're putting on the floor, because every problem that you have leads back to yourself. So I agree.
Okay. Wait. I can't let you go that fast. You said every problem I got, it goes back to, I need to look at me. Is that what you're saying?
Looking within myself. That's right. Not outside myself. It's within myself.
I didn't ask to be born poor, son. I didn't ask to be born ill-informed or with parents that didn't inform me. Or, so you mean that's my fault? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, because if you want to educate yourself and better yourself, that's up to you.
But
that's
all
not
I
up
see,
to your mama, that's not up to your daddy, not up to your children, not up to nobody around you but yourself.
What? You saying something now, brother. It sounds like you're trying to tell me that if happiness is going to be, it would be up to me to make it for myself. Now, that sounds easy. That sounds easy, Don. That help me with that now. You're going to have to come on with that a little bit more because there are people, sir, you know this. You're down there in Sam. You talk about it all the time. Believe it or not, despite all of the disparity that you see, there are people who want answers, man. They want to be free. They want to do better. They want to be happy. They don't want to fight. They don't have to struggle for it, but they just want to live a happy, productive life. Do you believe that, sir?
Oh, yes, sir. I agree with you. I think everybody want to be educated and economically advance themselves. I don't think no human being that's within the boundaries of the United States don't want to better themselves as human beings and economically have some stability in their life. I think every individual wants that.
Okay. Now, so many of us don't have it, though, big brother. What's up with that?
It goes back to self.
Okay.
It goes back to self. You have to develop that for yourself.
Now, Don,
you know, there is a collective community on even economics, but that still come back to self.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Okay. Do the brothers collectively want to come together and economically be independent? Or do they agree in their mind and their spirit that they're going to be modern-day slaves?
Interesting.
That's on them.
Now, who would be the slave master if they're under the condition that they're modern-day slaves?
They
who would we
themselves are their own master.
Say that again?
In today's system, the way the economics is set up in the global world, in the economy, is you make your own self a slave. You make yourself your own self to be economically independent. It's on you. There's nobody outside of you. It's you. You got to go within yourself.
Okay.
You know, find out what your calling is in the economic world. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
That's on the individual.
Are you suggesting that despite where everything else is, that you have the ability, all of us have the ability, anyone has the ability to change our circumstances, Don, and to get past whatever issues or problems that are hitting us and make life what it is we want? Because there's some people that would tell you, I just can't make it, man. I can't seem to get it right. Ain't nothing I do is working. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So help me with that. Uh-huh.
Mr. Dockery, the way I look at that, God blesses us every day. Sunday, I was coming from dealing with a young lady who lost her dad.
Oh.
2 days later, she lost her dad's mother. And she was
my.
Over in the area, what we call the crack den. She know my twin. She fell out crying and screaming, and nobody would. So me and another sister picked her up.
Okay.
Went, bought her some breakfast and talked to her. And you know what I'm saying? And then after that, Mr. Doc, I ran into my minister friend, who's got a ministry here behind Seth Mahai. And he got to preaching on why people grieve. They grieve because they didn't do what they were supposed to do while their parents were living.
Okay. While their parents were living.
He said they did what they were supposed to do and while their parents were living, they would be happy that their parents were going on home.
Oh, I see. Yeah, okay. That's interesting. Yeah. Sometimes that is true, Don. We don't tell our loved ones we love them enough, you know. While they're living, we're not affectionate toward one another. When people are here and when they're gone, you know, it's rough. Speaking of which, I have a cousin who just passed 2 days ago, and they should be funeralizing him pretty soon here in Chicago, you know. And but that's true. We have to make sure that we take every chance we get, you know what I mean? Take advantage of that to let folk know when we care about them, you know. And make sure that we're not so selfish that we don't show love and admiration and care and respect for one another, you know. So there you go. Now, so tell me a little bit about where I know you were looking at some things down there in that area that you like to see happen, and you really, I think you correctly put it in.
I think God done set the flow for our people. It's on them to come to that level of consciousness. And they've been educated and been brainwashed to see themselves just as modern-day slaves, you know, slave labor. They don't see themselves as business folk. And the reason they don't, they don't even see themselves from business standpoint of view on what Christ taught. You know, he said, give us this day our daily bread. See, they don't even see that standpoint, Mr. Dockery, because they've been so miseducated spiritually and on the physical, you know, circular, you know what I'm saying? So, but God done set the table here right in the community for them. I see a bank building, and I see a school that need to be institutionalized with an economic department in it. But the institution don't have that because the leadership is modern day slaves, you know.
Interesting.
That's what they are.
Okay. Interesting. Well, now, you know, can you appreciate how someone might take offense to the reference to slave, modern day slave? I understand what you're saying. There are some people who feel as though they're subservient to the will of others because they don't have the mechanisms or the resources to be financially independent themselves. You understand?
I disagree with that, Mr. Dockery. I see that it goes down to education. You know what I'm saying? I used to think the same, but it's education. You know, and there's laws on the book now that will help you to be economically independent. Now, if you don't live up to that law and those principles of that law, that ain't that law's a problem. That's the citizen itself or the individual themselves.
Interesting. Now, okay, that sounds good, big brother. But suppose I don't have anyone in my immediate circle that's sharing it. My mama, my brothers, preacher, elected officials, you understand, teacher. I'm not getting that information done. I'm not saying what you're saying is false. But I'm not getting that. So it's like
those elected officials and those religious leaders been educated in a certain institution that keep modern day slavery going on. Like we ain't got no ministers that know the strategy and the tactics on how to make social movements or revolution or change.
Okay.
So, you know, why would I get mad at any preacher over at Salem University because he wasn't around Reverend Bevel? They weren't around, so they don't know the mechanisms to make it work. True. If you're not around, then you don't know. You understand?
Right.
So why get mad at individuals don't know?
But that's my point, though. When you say, and I hear you say that my circumstances, and kind of related to what we're talking about, when the last laugh is on me, my circumstances essentially put me in a position of being a, quote, modern-day slave, end quote. That's not necessarily a bad
but
thing.
But if you want to be free, if you want to be free, Mr. Docker, you have to ask yourself certain questions in order to be free.
That's what I'm trying to pull out of you. What are those questions that I should ask myself? If I find myself in that predicament, what should I be asking myself, man? What should I say to myself? What are some things I can – well, I know one thing is I can really ask myself, what is it going to take for me to get better, right? And this is a hard one. This is a hard one, big brother, that most of us can't handle. What must I let go of? Uh-oh.
Thank you. What is the discipline you put on yourself to make yourself grow to the certain spiritual and mental level you want to be? You know, that's on the individual.
It is.
You know what I'm saying?
It
if
is.
They want to develop themselves spiritually and on a mental and intellectual level, that's still on the individual.
Okay.
See what I'm saying? Like our community right now. Our community economically depressed because women want stupid men.
They won't do what with men?
See, they don't want no educated man, no.
They don't want an educated man, you say?
No. That's when you're economically deprived because you agreed to hang around men that don't want that. You're not looking for that. You're looking for a modern day slave. See? I used to, when my dad said it, I used to didn't quite understand it, but when I took that banking course and I seen what Lincoln did in 1863, Now, you agree. You make the decision to be where you are. Ain't nobody stopping you. You stopping yourself. You want to educate and better yourself. The law is there for you to do that. And if you don't get up and do that, like I said, that's on you. You as an individual. The law is there.
All right. So
I can't get mad at none of my European brothers right now because none of my brothers of a dark hue want to be economically independent. I'm looking at them. And the law is there for them to do that.
You mean, okay, so their resources, mechanisms, and legal
practices
and support for that, what you're saying?
That's
okay.
Right.
Yeah. Well, now, I want to push back a little bit on something, if you allow me to. You were talking about women. I know a lot of women who are doing quite well, and they've worked hard, and they are very affluent and informed, I should say. Their challenge is they can't find males who are on that level. Now, I'm not slamming male or female, Don, but I'm just wanted you made reference to something. It's hard for them to find males on the intellectual level.
I agree. I totally agree. I agree with you.
You understand what I'm saying? A productive.
I agree. I totally agree. Certainly agree.
Okay. So that goes.
You know, when you got a bunch of brothers that agree to go to a certain other subcultures and not really ask the true question about their true identity and how to better themselves, and they keep doing the same old, you know, them, you can't screw the system now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't blame a male or a female, sir, who don't want to waste their time with somebody who ain't got nothing on their mind. Excuse my English. You understand what I'm saying? I don't blame them. I do not blame them at all. The most you can talk about, I'm 50 years old, Don, and all I can talk about is some childish games. That's the only conversation I got. Hooking and crooking. You understand? I'm during the 60, and that's all I got for you. Who want to put up with that, man?
See what I'm saying? 60 years old, you want a game bank. You want to come here and wear your hair like a game bank. 62 years old.
Dressed like
you want to wear your pants down around your butt.
Right.
At 62 years old. Come on, man.
Like I'm going to the playground.
Come on, man. Yeah. Help me out now. You 62 years old. You want to keep doing religious entertainment from the pulpit. You don't want to educate your people to certain divine principles. You want to play with them.
What?
At 62 or 63 years old. And Mr. Docker, one minister just left this plane that was on the board of Selma University. Well, a young man came and got me and said, hey, Don, let's go work on this church. Well, this same minister that was on the board of Selma University was one of the elders, was one of the high Shriner brothers, too. Had built the church out here next to Wallace College. Brother came to me and said, Don, let's go out here and I want you to come out here and help me turn the shingles off the roof. So I go up and then I come to find out Senator Hank Sanders went to that church. So I goes out there and turn the shingles back. Blake said, man, look at here. All the plywood on the church was old plywood rotten.
Well, maybe
so the minister, see what I'm saying? They shammed the money.
Well,
so
I don't know
who to blame? The European brothers or our brothers?
You say they shammed the money, Don. That's the
the money. You put old plywood. You put the rest of the money in your pocket. Ain't nobody stupid. You must think I'm boo-boo. I'm boo-boo-bee-doo.
Well, I take your
point. No. You're shamming the money.
Hold on one second. I take your point that someplace as important as the house of worship should have the best that you can bring it, right? And, you know, traditionally people talk about building funds and stuff like that, and churches are nonprofits, forms of nonprofits. so they can raise money untaxable. So you understand what I'm saying? And people give and you don't question what's being given. Your point is that those resources should be properly used to maintain the edifice as well as help, you know, maintain a healthy quality of life for the membership of the congregation, I would assume. That's in an ideal situation. But, you know, I just read an article where this wasn't a church, it was a nonprofit. A lady, you know, was arrested, Don. She was taking care of the money and she misused it. So it happens. It happens.
That's what I'm saying, Mr. Doctor. And then listen to this. The government that we got, the law enforcement at its highest level, mm-hmm. they corrupt. I've been told that by Intel in Chicago. They corrupt down here. And a brother was coming the other day, and, you know, I always get on him about being high on crack. Well, the other day he was sober, and he told me why he was high on crack. He said the FBI agents down here look like Ku Klux Klan members smoking meth. I looked at him and said, you might have a good point.
It's unfortunately how it appears, and I certainly won't say that about every member of the FBI, but it appears the Department of Justice and FBI have been weaponized for political purposes. That's what seems to be coming out more and more every day. Individuals, let me say that. I won't say everybody done. Individuals in those government entities have been politicized, unfortunately. And they shouldn't be.
Well, that's the way the young man perceived them when they came to him. You know what I'm saying? They didn't come to him in that he should have saw them in a Federal Bureau investigation way. He's seen them as, you know.
Yeah, that's a very important
job. So it's how you approach an individual and carry yourself to them. Was the FBI in suit, tie, and dressed up and clad? How did they approach the young man?
Responsibly, because our tax dollars pay for those positions. We should expect them to maintain a high level of professional decorum, right?
See what you're saying?
Yeah.
See what you just said?
We should expect them to be honest.
They might have came out with some jeans on with their hair long, and they might have well been snorting some and smoking some crack when it came.
I don't know anything about it.
I don't know. I wasn't there, but that's the way he perceived them.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. But what we can say is, based on the historical agency, we know what the expectation is from the taxpayers, what we should expect.
Yes, sir.
We know that. We do know that. you know, it's the uniform police report that goes through the FBI and Department of Justice that's produced that helps us, keeps us aware of all of the reports and what have you, of homicides, of murders, suicides, thefts, and all those type of things. So they have an important role, and no one should abuse that, you know, their position of authority. In fact, the 1965 Civil Rights Act, that's what's called the Color of Law Clause in it, as I read, and it's the thing that prohibits people in government positions from abusing their authorities to take advantage of folks, irregardless of what your ethnicity is or, you know, your economic status. They should never do that. They should never do that. They can go to jail for that. And I personally believe those who do should. You know what I mean? Yeah, that's mm-hmm. where they go. But that's what it is, man.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah,
it's certain things that I see, Mr. Dockery, that they thinking you can't see. You know what I'm saying? And I'm gonna say this and say it clear: the elected officials that are in office right now, to me, they're a joke. They're put there by certain fraternities to get along with other elements in the community. Look at this, mm-hmm. Mr. Dockery. Today, I went to apply. I'm 62 years old. I went to apply for housing. And the people that runs the housing here that gets the funding is the Catholics. I was turned down today, and I know why I was turned down.
Mm.
See what I'm saying? Because I know the people that's in the mechanisms of running the thing.
I see.
I know their thought process. I know their patterns. I know their mm-hmm. behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
okay.
You know what I'm saying? They don't want to be exposed. And then I'm working with LaRouche organization that wants to educate. They don't want that. They won't keep people safe.
All right. Well, let me stop for a second here. We are, you're on live. This is Talk Straight. This is Talk Straight on blogtalkradio.com. BFFTalk.com. And you'll follow us on Facebook here in our the BFC Institute group. Feel free to give me a call here, 657-383-0944. We're talking specifically from the topic, When the Last Laugh Is on Me. How do you feel about that? What do you think about that? When circumstances around you cause you to be the one that it seems like everybody laughs. Sometimes people are not laughing at you. It just feels like that. You feel like, man, doggone, I'm the only one having it rough. Everybody's around having a ball. Folks break out laughing in the room. It sounds like they're laughing at me. So, but and we're home with Brother Don out of Selma, Alabama.
Huh?
He's been talking with us, and the phone lines are open, 657-383-0944. So, Mr. Bell, out there in Selma, Alabama there. Let me ask you this. 10 years from now, and we've talked about this before, what's the chance that anything we have today, our best ideas, might be able to be passed on? And what are some good steps to that, Don? I know I've asked that question before in some form or fashion, but I believe that this may, because, Don, we ain't going to be able to turn the hands of time back off.
No.
Not at all.
Whatever mistakes we made, we can't erase them, can we?
No.
But can't we learn?
We can improve. We can improve ourselves.
Okay.
You know, correct ourselves and improve ourselves and move ahead.
That's why I'm asking this question. That's why I'm asking. Because, you know, ain't nothing I can do to go back, man. That time ain't going to ever come back for me. It's over with. Let that go.
No, ain't coming back.
But there's something. And, you know, generally, Don, when men turn 50, they begin to ask that question. Have I done enough before my time is up? And do I have enough energy, you know what I mean, to make up for what I haven't done? That's a natural question. It's a natural question.
Mm-hmm.
So with that in mind, within the next 10 years, sir, we've been talking a lot here on Talk Straight, and I know you're a man that have a lot of ideas, as am I. Is there any chance that something we say and do could be written down or put in some sort of structured way by which we can ensure that 10 years from now, some young folk will benefit from that? Got some good thought. We talk about a lot of good things. You know what I mean? What do you think about that, big brother? And how can we go about doing that? We ain't got no money. We ain't got no money. How can we start?
Well,
yeah.
Mr. Darker, the other day, a brother took me to the countryside of the African-American community outside of Selma. And I seen a field of beautiful greens that were kept so clean.
What?
And I looked at my brother and I said, who place is that? He said, that's them Strong's place.
Whose?
So, the Strong, they call them the Strong's.
Okay.
And then I'm like, man.
Now, who are these Strongs? Do you know who the Strongs are? Sound like they keep a good garden.
There's a family here that are African descent.
Okay.
Been around in the community. And
are
what
they
do, they basically.
Do they farm?
They look like they're good farmers.
Okay.
Look like
okay.
They need to expand a little bit.
Yeah. Okay. If they would be willing, perhaps they can be some instructors for someone who might want to do the same type of thing. You know?
Mm.
And it's interesting when we look at the supply chain, Don, how many of us are so dependent on grocery stores for food. And if they ever close them, a lot of folks would probably just go crazy, you know, because they wouldn't know how to farm themselves and grow their own food. It's likely to be chaotic.
You know what's happening right now? You don't want to grow no food.
Uh-huh.
So you got to make money any way you can.
Mm-hmm.
Huh?
Yeah.
Stressful.
Yeah.
But if you know how to grow food, turn ground, dish ground, plant seed. You know the whole science of the soil, the plant. You wouldn't be afraid.
All right.
But the reason you're afraid because you don't know the facts.
Well, or some people just leave that to other folk, Don. They pay them to do that. You know?
And then when you do that, then you leave from here in the early age. Mr. Docker, this morning, my cousin Steve was mad at this young man. And mm-hmm. I looked at Steve. I said, you remember his older sister, Sherry? What happened mm-hmm. to Sherry Vaughn? Mm-hmm. Sherry Vaughn then was up there in Charlotte, up there eating everything. That's what they, you're killing yourself. You're bringing yourself to early death by eating the incorrect foods. You're not taking care of your health. That's your responsibility.
Now,
God gave
guilty.
You this temple.
Hey, Don, I'm going to look guilty of that, too. Huh? I'm going to look guilty of that, too. Yeah, the ice cream, Don, you understand. Confession is good for the soul. I'm telling on myself.
See what I'm saying? I'm eating chocolate right now.
What?
Yeah.
Look at you. Well, you know, the thing is reflection, right? And we're laughing at ourselves now, Don. That's the whole point here. When the last laugh
we're
is
killing
over,
ourselves.
There are some things, though, that the average person could take note of and make assessment of, right? And sometimes it's easy to make those changes. Sometimes it's not, because we may have to reconstruct our whole life pattern. You know what I mean? And the older we get, the harder it is, Don, for us to stop what we get used to doing. Is that a fair statement? The older we become, the more difficult it is for us to stop a certain pattern of behavior. Why is that, big brother?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, that's real hard.
Why is that?
That's a hard one.
Huh? Could it be that because we've gotten away with it so long? I'm thinking about the text in Genesis. When
you get addicted
Jehovah
to it.
Jehovah told Adam and Eve, don't eat of the tree of knowledge of good, because you shall surely die, right? And typically when people read that, the assumption is you're going to die immediately. But when folk get away, done with sin, disobedience, they feel invincible. Huh? In fact, I've learned as a pastor that everybody don't want to be saved. So don't go out of your way trying to kill yourself to save everybody, because everybody don't want to be saved. Whosoever will, let them come. You understand what I'm saying? Yeah. The point I'm trying to make is there are some people happy where they are in life. Even if we don't think that's not a good place for them to be, they happy.
Uh-huh.
And that kind of relates to the question, why is it that after you get used to doing something for so long, it's hard for me and you to turn our course and turn around? I mean, doggone, right? I ain't done it this long, man. Have you ever heard people say, I got to die from something? Yeah. I got to die from something. That's the justification for, you know, or what folk get into. And I'm not knocking them. Just making a point. All right. Well, we'll keep moving here, Don. 657-383-0944. If it's okay, big brother, I'm going to take a little commercial break here and kind of highlight the school, and then we'll come back on the other side of this commercial break. Is that all right with you? You're listening to Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dockery, and we're talking from the topic tonight, when the last laugh is on me. What I do when everybody laughing, I'm the brunt of the joke. We'll be right back after this brief message.
Two things are true about students in urban American public schools. There are some students who do well and go on in life to become productive citizens, while there is a secondary population of students who go on to live lives that aren't so socially acceptable. While this secondary population of students, some 18% in Nashville, Davidson County, exhibit a number of behavioral issues and face extradition, it's no wonder why those students struggle to succeed academically. If they can't follow the simple rules of order, how are they expected to be focused enough to learn? I'm Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery, and I have recognized the needs of this population continually being unmet, despite the best efforts of many dedicated educators over the years. As a result, my experience as a former special education teacher, youth counselor, and candidate for local and state offices, I've developed a school model to help address this troubled population. Dockery Christian Academy is a private, non-denominational Christian school whose primary focus is engaging parents as partners with educators and teachers in order to develop pro-social character for student learners. I'd love to share more information with you about this innovative education model. So please connect with me at www.dockeryacademy.org. That's D-O-C-K-E-R-Y, academy.org. Connect with us on Facebook at Dockery Christian Academy, or use the hashtag at 2020DCA. Thank you. I look forward to engaging you. Together we can make a difference for all of our children. You're much more than the struggles that you go through. You're not defined by your pain, so let it go. You're not a victim. You're listening to Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. We ask that you give due notice there. We are still working very hard here, Brother Bevel, to provide an academic environment of enrichment and support for at-risk young men. And we're doing what we can to be able to fund and sustain that effort. So you heard the announcement. If you want to get with us and support that call, we'll be happy to hear from you. You can give me a call at you can give me an email, rather, if you want to talk more about it here from the station, bfcinstitute@gmail.com. That's Bravo Fox Charlie, BFC as in Bravo Fox Charlie, institute@gmail.com. We're looking forward to, again, we began that effort last year just at the height of COVID, and it just decimated it like many things were. Lord be our help, we will continue that effort and do that on a small scale until we grow where it needs to be. All right. So Don, you know, if a man is not moving every day in the direction he say he want to go, is he going anywhere?
He ain't going nowhere. That's exactly what's happening right here in film.
Huh?
Ain't going nowhere. I just told you, right in our neighborhood, the bank building's empty. There's no economic department at Selman University. And it's done intentionally. So it ain't going nowhere. Somebody done set the mechanism where you don't go nowhere.
Right. Okay. There's a philosopher by the name, a Roman philosopher, Lucius Seneca. And he's noted for making the statement, Don, that luck is what happens when preparation meets opportunity. Do you agree with that notion?
Say what now? Repeat that again, Mr. Dockery.
The Roman philosopher Seneca, Lucius Seneca, he's noted for the statement, luck is what happens when preparation meets opportunity. Would you agree with that assertion, that notion?
Sound like to me, that don't come down to luck. If you preparing yourself, it seems like you come out with a scientific outcome, wouldn't you?
Say that again? Whoa! You just dropped something on me, man. Say that again. You said if you prepared, you come out with
it don't become luck. If you working on what's right and doing what's right, that ain't no luck.
That's scientific.
I see. Let me see.
That's perfection.
Interesting. Let me see if St. Louis would agree with that. Welcome, St. Louis, to our discussion this evening on Talk Straight. We're talking from the topic, when the last laugh is on me. What's up with that? So, St. Louis, I asked Brother Bevel there in Selma if Lucius Seneca was a Roman philosopher around 6 AD or so, I believe it was. And he made the statement, he's noted for the philosophical position that luck is what happens when preparation meets opportunity. He said that's just mere luck. Would you agree with that?
He said when preparation does what?
Meets opportunity. It's just luck.
Well, you can do all the preparation you have that you know to do.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always an element of luck that comes into play.
Interesting. Okay.
No, you can do everything right, but there's always some unforeseen that arise. Now, here's what also.
Okay, talk to me.
The wise and the skillful person know how to handle those unforeseen so it does not derail the project.
Interesting. Wait a minute now. You're a scientist. You are by profession and trade an engineer, if I understood correctly. And when you build your buildings, when you lay out your blueprints, is that chance? Is that just a stroke of luck? Or do you use a formulated process? That, you know what I mean?
They use what you call a formulated process to create that plan.
Okay.
And you know, it's a funny thing about plans, too. You know what it is?
If
it don't work on paper, it ain't going to work in real life.
Wait a minute now. What do you mean by that? Explain it to me like I'm 3 years old. So if you can't put it on paper, huh?
If it don't work on paper, it's not going to work in real life. Stop. Don't go no further.
Now, some of us, St. Louis, have not been socially conditioned to think on that higher level to where before we act, we codify our thoughts about what steps we're going to take or actions we're going to take. We're just not used to that, man. That's not in our social construct. Are you suggesting that the most successful people are those who give some thought, at least, to documenting what has been done, what they are done, and what they plan to do? Is it? I'm hearing something from you. I want to make sure I don't want to get it wrong. Am I hearing that? Sandals?
You got to know what you're doing. Like I told you, I got a young man that I talked to, and they starting a business in aerial refueling. He's looking at that very closely. You know what aerial refueling is, don't you?
Well, and tell us a little bit about it, if you don't mind, please.
Aerial refueling is when jet planes are refueled in the air by a tanker, usually a C-41.
Yes.
And what it's good for is that if a plane is flying, left New York, flying to California,
mm-hmm.
and they start running low on fuel rather than land and have to go through a time and costly procedure, they refuel in the air.
I see.
And keep on flying.
Okay. All
so
right.
This is a black man, along with some others with him, that's going to start this company up. And the market says that the business will be worth over $24 billion in the next 4 years.
Interesting.
And really, there's not much of that going on at all. You just heard where it said that, and companies like Amazon, FedEx, is flying packages across the nation.
Okay.
In order for them and Amazon to be able to give you next day delivery, what they need to cut out all the red tape and all the obstacles. And when you land, you know yourself, you can be on the tarmac for an hour trying to wait to take off, right?
Okay.
Where if you land, you got to get at the back of the line after you fuel on the ground. That's going to take up time.
Okay.
And an hour and a half you don't spend on the ground, you could be more than halfway out to California if you was landed in Chicago, for instance. Hell, you landed at O'Hara Airport, you might be on the tarmac for a week. It seems like.
Interesting. Interesting. Okay. Okay. Well, Don, now, I was hearing you say, Don, that if a person is prepared, that infers that they're taking some noted steps, right? And when an opportunity comes, after you have taken steps, why shouldn't you be guaranteed success? Now, St. Louis said there are unforeseen circumstances. That is true. But what he did come back, Don, and say is that the most prepared individuals plan B and C for the unforeseen. So what do you think about that, Don? Don, you there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, what do you think about that? Did you hear the question?
No, I don't have no question.
No, did you hear the question?
No, I didn't.
I asked you a question. Earlier you made the statement that if a person is prepared, why does it have to be luck? You know, where does luck come in? And St. Louis was
sharing. No, if you prepare it, it's going to come out scientific.
Scientific? Ah.
Yeah, if you prepare it.
Well, now, interesting. What's the difference? What we used to tell our boys in scouting is that you may not always be ready, but you'll definitely be prepared, Don. That's what we used to tell them. You may not be ready, but you'll definitely be prepared because you have equipped yourself, you thought about your journey, and you've laid some steps out for you, and you got contingencies. You understand, St. Louis? For what may or may not happen. You understand what I'm saying? And what you're learning is to prepare yourself for the inevitabilities of life. But, you know, you may not necessarily be ready for the challenge, but you'll be prepared to deal with it. Is there a difference in that, gentlemen? I mean, because there are a lot of people who live their life on a whim, and they just throw their hands up in the air and say, forget it, because I don't have no certainty, and I'm not going to even try. I ain't going to even try because I don't even know if it's going to. I may do all that for nothing. What I hear people say all the time. I did that for nothing. Or maybe you didn't prepare or think through it enough. Is that possible, Don? That people just don't spend enough time planning and strategizing?
You just said, there you go. Planning and praying. They don't plan at all. They don't pray at all. They just get up and just move and do. There's no planning. There's no praying. How are you going to develop as a community and you don't get together and plan and pray?
Yeah.
Huh?
Agreed. And St. Lawrence, I thought about something as I'm reading these articles every day about the supply chain challenges and what have you. I said, what if they're looking for workers right now, St. Louis? I said, what if some of these young cats who are hungry out here in the streets position themselves to go in there as a substitute labor force and meet that need, that need and demand? Couldn't they make a living for themselves in the midst of this?
That's what they should have done, but that damn Joe That's Biden and them Democrats don't think that way.
I mean,
and see, I didn't vote for him. I vote for Donald Trump.
I understand.
And see, Joe Biden, you know, Donald Trump put a big something factory there in Nashville. I can't think of it. I think of it here in a minute. But like I said before, all those black males and others, but you got over 400,000 black males in prison. Well, them people should be rehabilitated, not bring people from third world companies.
Wow.
You had Hankook Tire Plant. It had 1,800 jobs to open up in Nashville under the leadership of that man.
Okay.
And you know, a lot of other ones in the South, too. Bombardier Airbus, Mobile, Alabama, 600 jobs. You got the 5 aluminum plants, 4 in Kentucky. So that's, you used your people in your home. You don't be bringing people from all over the damn world. You know, just because people are living in poverty in other parts of the world, that don't give them a right to come to the United States.
Well, that's true.
If you
too.
Come to the United States or any place, you're supposed to bring something that would make it better, not bring it, draw it down.
Okay. Okay. That's an interesting position, because there are people out there who say that we, you know, these people want a good life, want to improve themselves, but we do, we are a nation of laws and regulations, and we're all for immigration. From a legal standpoint and what have you, and you know what I mean?
Let me show you the dangers in that. First place, you bringing people here who don't have no sense of a constitution and no sense of the United States and its founding.
Interesting.
And
okay.
Your uncles that fought in war, the Vietnam War, the Korean War, the World War II, the Tuskegee Airmen, they have no sense for that. And those people that gave their life and blood during those period of time for you to exist today, you, their descendants, you, their forebearers, that should go for you, not bringing people from other parts of the world who may have had ancestors that was fighting and killing yours. Think.
Would you be willing to sponsor someone if they wanted to come and learn and go through the naturalization process, St. Louis? Would you be open to
sponsor? I'll sponsor my own children first.
Okay, they grown.
When you ever been on an airplane and the stewardess is telling you how to use the oxygen mask?
Right, yeah.
She says when time comes to put on the oxygen mask to drop down, you put yours on first. Then you help the next person. Well, you're supposed to help your own first before you go do yourself and help your own before you be helping somebody else around the world. And here's another thing. United States give these countries aid. They've given Haiti over 260-some-odd million this year. Since 2010, $5.4 billion. Now, you know what people say? Well, they got bad leaders. Well, I didn't vote for them. I'm not going over there and picking up rifles to push their leaders out. That's for them to do.
I get what you're saying. I do personally hate to see what's happening. I agree with you that there has to be some sort of order and structure of things. I agree with that. But
let me ask you a question, Ruben.
Sure.
You like peach cobbler?
Oh, yeah, man. Don't start nothing.
All right, let me give you a scenario.
Don't start nothing.
Your wife comes walking in there and put that peach cobbler down the middle of the table.
Help me.
You, your wife, how many kids you got? Two?
Two.
You, your wife, and your two kids are getting ready to eat that peach cobbler. About that time you get ready, wait a minute, now, about that time you get ready to get in that peach cobbler.
Right.
You go to the door and there stand 10 people.
What?
Oh, we having problems where we come from. Can you help us? And they look over your shoulder. Oh, look at that on the table. Come on in, y'all.
Let me. You asking me what I do with my peach cobbler? Is that what you asking me?
Well, I tell you what. If you wouldn't do it, I'd do it.
What? Done. What would you do with your peach cobbler? Would you share it, Don? Or would you tell me, y'all going to get on with me a while because I ain't finished my dessert, man. What would you do, Don, if you're in that scenario, big brother? Don, have you turned you muted your phone? Can you hear us, Don? Okay. Well, we'll hopefully he'll get back with it. St. Louis, we'll keep talking here. Interesting. Now, I my natural response would be, hold up, man, where did y'all come from? And I would ask the question, what would you have done if you couldn't found my house? knocked on my door and saw my peach cobbler, what would you have done? Right, Daniel? Is that right?
Yeah, that's one thing you could have said.
Okay, all right. Now, I'm all for helping people. But, again,
you did. You sent them aid. You sent them aid.
Yeah. You have to look at the circumstance. I saw where I was looking on the news where this caravan was coming in, and the people were literally saying that they're coming because the president, Joe Biden, he's gonna let us in. What? Come on, man. I mean, that dog ain't gonna hunt now. And these were not people from South America.
People come from Africa.
That's the truth. That's
how the hell they manage it. And look how many countries they go through to get on a boat.
Now that's the problem right there. You see, that's the problem because this is pre-contrived. This is deliberate here. This ain't happenstance. These are not people just running because they're having a hard time. Folk have planned to do this. And I wonder sometimes if there was some sort of messaging, coded messaging that suggested to them, come on, y'all, come on, we got you. You understand what I'm saying? That's I was like, wow, man, that's pretty rough there. Because what it
Congo
does,
is landlocked. Uganda is landlocked. How many countries you go through to get to a seaport to get on a boat or airport to get on a plane to fly to South America? You walk through 11 more countries to come up to the U.S. border. That's a bunch of crap.
Yeah, well, I would...
And you know why they're doing it, don't you? They're doing it to use these people. They're going to use them. They're going to put them in areas where where it's marginal, like it's purple, in order to push it blue.
Yeah.
And see, the people can't vote, but they can be counted for representation. They can't vote, but they can be counted toward apportionment.
Well, that's going to be the legal challenge, though, because really, that's for their Supreme Court precedent, as I understand. I'm not a lawyer.
It's in the Constitution.
The Constitution says.
That's why I come to hear the 3/5 compromise.
And there is Supreme Court precedent for the apportionment. I think it was Tennessee was one of those states that had a Supreme Court case that settled that in terms of how apportionment should be.
You remember Donald Trump wanted to have where you checked off on the census if you was a citizen or not, and the court said you can't do that?
I saw that, yes. I saw that.
That's something you got to consider.
Well, the only problem with that, though, is that you have a right not to say that if you don't want to, and because this is a federal document, it forces you to say yay or nay, and I don't think they had the option of choice on there. I think that was the main issue.
They shouldn't be in the country illegally is what the problem is. And then here's the next thing. The federal government don't have any control over state borders. But somebody passed a law where they said that these NGOs like Catholic Charities, Lutheran Charities, can resettle people in states without getting permission. And that there in itself is crazy. It's a bunch of crap. Like Texas is doing now. They're lining up containers along its southern border, which is pretty damn big. Well, at that one city anyway. They got a right to do that. The federal government protects your national borders. That's when water comes ashore. And then you are allowed, I think, 20 feet. If you were shipwrecked or something that way, you are allowed 20 feet beyond the water line. Then from there on, you come under federal jurisdiction. But the state has a border too. And that state governor has a right to protect its state borders.
Okay. Well, I was just going to say, my understanding is that the 10th Amendment extends quite a bit of plenary authority to governors or to states, basically, to determine their borders, their laws, and so forth and so on. And the federal government cannot federal government can't take that away from them. So I think a lot of this is going to wind up in the Supreme Court. unfortunately, and that's going to be taxed.
And that's another thing, too. See, you got some ignorant people themselves. They think that the federal government is the big dog. That's not true. The federal government gets its power from the states. That's where their power come from.
My last read was that somewhere between 80, maybe 85% of the electorate across the United States is ill-informed about constitutional issues relative to elections and powers of states and things of that nature. So I'm not surprised.
You're absolutely right. When they thought the federal government going to reform police, going to do away with police and all that crazy mess, they were in for a rude awakening.
And, you know, I think that's just a handful of people. And I'm not knocking them, beating them up, but they need to learn. That's just a handful of people that are operating on that notion. You know, that's just not real.
Yeah.
Not real. But, okay, we're talking from the topic. When the last laugh is on me, that's what we've been talking about here. There are a lot of people who feel like every time folk are having fun, Don, you still there? Don, you still there? Can you hear me? There are a lot of people who feel like that they're missing out and that the laugh is on them. You know?
It's all kind of opportunities in this country, Ruben. Yeah. And I see young people starting to make some pretty nice moves, especially some entertainers, Kanye West and others.
Yeah.
But they are making some moves.
Make something of themselves. Are you familiar with the rapper T.I.?
Yeah, I think he's done done some crazy stuff.
He sure has.
But hopefully he got some smartness in his behind.
Let me tell you why I brought him up. Because I was reading the other day where he bought up, Bankhead? A lot of impoverished area in Bankhead and converted to affordable housing. Now, I thought that was a responsible way of addressing a concern that was risen over the last 5-10 years or so, and particularly for people that are struggling economically. I said, man, that's one excellent way to use your money and to put your actions behind your mouth.
Well,
you know
it's an investment.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what he's going to find out the hard way is that his investment is going to have to prove itself worthy at some point. You understand what I'm saying? And I don't know how that's going to be, but it sounds like an excellent move, though. I was really proud to hear that from him.
Well, you get some people that's working that you can hire to give you consultation. That's good. And he probably get recommendations from people who's already success. And it just disturbed me when people be going and attacking millionaires and billionaires. Like Bezos. Bezos didn't have no easy way coming up.
No, that's
his
what
mother,
I'm
his mama had him when she was 17. She was still in high school. Wow. His daddy was 19 years old.
Mm-hmm.
He struggled. Had to work at McDonald's. He went on and got his degree in either electrical or mechanical engineering and computer science. Then he went on and worked for some people, putting in many hours. Then he came up with an idea. And thus it is, Amazon today.
Brilliant. I think he started in his mama's garage, if I'm not mistaken, or somebody's garage, if I understood correctly. That's in somebody's garage. So, sure. And that's one of the things I would say, that when you look at your situation, you're not happy with it, just ask yourself, man, what can I do? Legally now.
One of my foremen, son-in-law, was making computer wafers in their garage.
Really?
With chemicals getting burnt up.
Wow.
And if it hadn't been successful, then he would have probably been more so richer than Microsoft. I tell you what, they weren't doing it no place else in the world. Now Taiwan leads the world in it.
Okay.
But this was back in like the 70s, like 1970, that Ronnie Shine is his name, that he was doing it.
you know, that these are examples of how, and, you know, I go back to not just last summer, but for years I've heard, and we've talked about this a lot, people cry and decry how the government and white people and races are keeping them back. But the reality is, you know, there's a lot of natural skill and talent. And oftentimes people are afraid to use their best talent. And the fear is, I might fail. You know, I might slip up, I might not be successful. Kind of goes back to that question that I posed earlier, you know. Yes, it's a risk that comes with it. You know what I mean? But, it's risk every day we go out in life.
Well, you know, you hear this all the time.
Go ahead.
They're talking about white supremacy and everything. You know what it is? It's what you call natural selection.
All right, Darwin.
Natural selection.
All right, Darwin.
It goes on in every life form. The ants, the mosquitoes, birds, fish, human beings. Natural selection. This is the survival of the fittest.
You probably
and
think it's
if
right
you
close.
Have a lake,
uh-huh.
If you got a lake with catfish in it,
uh-huh.
And some bluegill,
sorry.
Take some sturgeon and put in that lake. After a period of time, them sturgeon would have taken over and killed them other fish to take over that territory.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing goes on your body. On your skin right now, you got viruses, every other thing trying to get in past your defense, which is your immune system. That's
right.
Your skin. Your skin is your biggest immune deployment.
Okay.
You're trying
okay.
to get through them skin.
Yeah.
And at the same time, you got things that's trying to keep them out. It's just like if you get an infection on your finger from a cuticle. You would notice that the tip of that finger, right there beneath that, below that fingernail, is going to start swelling up.
Wow.
And it's hot.
All right.
Well, it's swelling up because all your defenses done went down there to keep that invasion from coming in. And they fighting. That's why when you take a pin and stick in that swelling up, that white stuff come out of there. That's pus. That's dead matter that the defense don't kill.
Okay. Hold on 1 second, St. Louis. I got a caller from 612 that's joining us here. I believe it's the first time caller. You listen to Talk Straight. This is the host, Reverend Dockery. And our general topic this evening is when the last laugh is on me. We're joined by a gentleman out of the general of the St. Louis area and Selma, Alabama. Welcome, caller, to Talk Straight. Question or comment thus far?
Yes, sir. Thank you for taking my call. I just want to say, and as far as the plight of the urban communities and the black community specifically, I don't think any other group in this country that is so easily manipulated by misinformation that's designed to cause them to react in an emotional way than the black community.
Okay. Okay.
So,
okay.
The last election in particular displayed that clearly. Like, for example, the Breonna Taylor case. It's fascinating how whether it was the media or community activists or civil rights leaders or whoever was involved, the way they manipulated that story to get people to react and to get involved in becoming activists and getting them hyped up for the election, it was incredible. And I'm pretty familiar with the case, but I mean, think about how many people thought that story was an innocent woman laying in a bed. Police run into the wrong house and shoot her in her bed while she's sleeping. That's what the general public was left to believe. That's what actually happened. And if that were the actual case, you could understand why everyone would be upset, because that's a terrible injustice. But it was amazing how the media and all these political leaders left out a whole bunch of facts on purpose to mislead the public. Like, they didn't tell anyone that her boyfriend that she was with at the time was a drug dealer that the police were investigating. So the police, when they showed up, they announced they were the police that her boyfriend opened fire on the cops first. And all that information was completely left out. And it's sort of like, it just makes you wonder, was it done purposely or what? But it looks to me like, I see that done over and over again. And my last point would be, when it comes to viewing, you know, economic policy or government policy, so much of the general public is misinformed. They have no idea how much they're being taxed. They complain that the rich are not paying their taxes or not paying their fair share, which is a total lie. They're being led to believe that the rich are somehow getting away with paying minimal taxes. That's not true. They pay the lion's share. They carry the major tax burden, especially in income taxes in America.
Right.
You know, and most people who, you know, even when it's the 1%, they the way the media and the left misrepresents things by making it seem like the 1% are somehow the small group of billionaires, when in reality the 1% are people who make around $538,000 a year or more. That applies to businesses as well. And they say these things because they're just, that's my last one, the Democrats and the media have to find ways to people to do things for them that go against their own interests, like defunding the police or raising taxes, which is, you know, which has historically been an unpopular thing, which is why in the past Democrats and Republicans ran on cutting taxes. But in order to convince people raising taxes is a good idea, they have to lie to them and make them think that the rich don't pay taxes or they don't pay their fair share. It's amazing how the and most recently, I don't know how far this is going on, but this is my final point. You saw now that the guy who started the Steele dossier, who lied to the FBI, got arrested. Now, the FBI and media went on for 2 years, in 2016 through 2018, and literally lied about the fact that the former president had colluded with the Russians and stole the election.
Okay.
And they did it flagrantly for 2 years. Now we find out the whole thing was a lie, that people within the FBI, the CIA, and the White House at the time knew it was a lie, and they still did it anyway, this thing little to no one held accountable for it.
Okay, all right.
It's just, what kind of country are we living in right now? It's just like you think it's some
you're good. I want to go back to your example. I think you made a very important point, and that is in the midst of the emotional uproar, let's use the Breonna Taylor incident, and she's just one of many that were exploited, I believe. The tragedy was that a young African-American female was gone. But what was missed out of that is the root cause of all of that. The root cause was some behaviors that my people engage in that cause undercover detectives to come there and to be looking for other figures and what. That's what brought them even there at that time of the night in the whole nine yards. What was missed by those who got caught up in emotionalism of things was how you can stop that, see? And that's the same thing when it comes to, this is something that I've told everybody around Nashville that know me, know that this is what those that will listen, I would share it with them. If you're really concerned about crime in your neighborhood, in your community, what you should do is to police it so that crime knows it's not welcome. You follow what I'm saying? And that was the root cause of it right there. It was sad that this young lady got caught up in that, right? Nobody deserves to die. But if I went to a 20-story building right now, walked all the way to the roof, and stepped off the edge, y'all know what's going to happen to me, right? Y'all know what's going to happen, right? Unless I got a parachute, I'm in some trouble. Are y'all with me? And so I think that's a great point there, caller, that the media and other individuals, they use those type of things, particularly historically. I've witnessed it in my lifetime in the African-American. But I'm noticing something, 612. I'm noticing that more people are waking up to that, and they're realizing, he left us here, they're realizing that's a game. That's a hustle. That's a hustle that's being played to keep you angry, on edge, and feeling like a victim. Why, St. Louis? So somebody can come in and say, I'm your savior. Long as you what? Do like I tell you. Some people are waking up to that, St. Louis. And I'm glad to see that folk are realizing that. Did you want to comment on that thing, Louis, at all?
Well, yes, the caller is right. You are, too. The news media played a lot of people, I could say, and got them into that mode of feeling. Nobody looked at the things that young lady was involved in. And you know what? Here's the funny thing. And it just goes to show you the difference and wisdom that lies within the ages. Because when I was a kid, the older people would have said she had it coming. They would have said
yeah.
that George Floyd had it coming. Other words,
true.
They are quoting, you reap what you sow.
Right. Right. That's true. I mean, as sad as the outcome was, right, a life was gone. And I you know, call me a conspiracy theorist, but I think I know some people who funded certain apparatuses that exploited those crises. And I think the
Trayvon Martin. What did you teach your daughter? You got a daughter, don't you?
Yeah, I do.
You teach your daughter, she's walking down the street and look over her shoulder and somebody's following her. What do you teach her?
Well, yeah. Yeah, she knows what to do.
I told mine to run.
Okay.
Run to or knock on somebody's door or run to a business and go in there. Don't circle around and try to fight them.
Okay, okay, okay. I get that. Yeah, right. That makes sense if you're not prepared. My daughter was taught with the mentality, you run up, you get done up. They may not want to walk up behind her and follow her like that because they would have caught something. They would have coddled her something. That's how I trained my daughter. But everybody don't have that training. So I'm just saying. But, yeah.
Yeah, I'm talking about kids now. I'm not talking about no
teenagers.
But you teach a kid, kids supposed to run. They can come around here before with 6 years old.
Sure. Don, can you hear me? I think he's still outside.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We're getting your background noise. I know you're outside there. But, yeah, I mean, here's the thing, though, gentlemen. Here's the takeaway, St. Louis. Here's the takeaway. And, Don, here's the takeaway from that conversation. And we'll wrap up our discussion for tonight. We have got to be responsible for not only ourselves, but the neighborhood community we live in. And there needs to be some sort of communication with people about what's best for us, you know, what's going to keep our children safe and things of that nature. St. Louis, you were talking about Sanford, Florida there with Trayvon Martin. Unfortunately, that area down in Sanford, Florida, before 2012, at least 10 years or better, it was a retirement area for people coming from up north, and it was only a certain demographic of people that lived there, but it began to change, right? And unfortunately, as it changed, you had more crime come and things of that nature, causing more neighborhood watch groups. I'm not justifying the clown Zimmerman, should have set his behind down somewhere like police told him, but, you know, these were the ingredients of these things.
Who moved in the neighborhood?
African Americans began to move in.
Well, then that's what you got to
numbers.
Say. You
in
have
larger
to
numbers.
Say it
historically.
Like it is.
Historically.
I mean, people always like, and you know, the thing is with me, when they don't say who they are, I know who they are because they ain't saying it. When I read the news, they don't say who they are, what they look like, I know who they are. You got
well,
to say who it is. And you know, the sad thing about this,
okay,
when that comes into an area where people have invested, have built,
mm-hmm.
kept nice and tidy,
right.
low tax base, low crime.
Right.
If you got a low crime, you're going to have a low tax base. Not
right.
like St. Louis, where 51% of his budget at 1 year went to public service, which includes police. Well, then that
right.
takes away money from parks and recreation. That takes
yeah.
away money from the trash pickup, bulk trash
mm-hmm.
pickup, and all mm-hmm. those services that citizens like to have.
Right, right, right. Well, and I was just going to say that St. Louis, that was the largest growing population, as I understand. You had a Hispanic growth as well around the same time. But the point here is there was a population shift which brought about a social mentality, a shift in the social mindset there. And I believe the young man, unfortunately, was a victim of that circumstance by and large because a week reportedly, if you read the paper in the Sanford, Florida area, the newspaper the week earlier identified two African-American males in hoodies who broke into an apartment and ran a woman and her baby in the closet. And she called her husband, right, from work after
mm-hmm.
they ran her in there. And that's essentially the same outfit that was described, unfortunately, as Trayvon Martin having on. Not that he was
wearing.
Not that he was guilty of anything, but let's keep everything in proper context. You see what I mean? But
well, that's another
the
thing.
Go ahead.
These people that's committing these crimes is dressing like you. You know, you know what I'm saying? They dressing like you, so they are putting you at risk. They got on white T-shirts. You got on white T-shirts. They got on some dark. You got on some dark thing. They got on Timberlake looking shoes. You got them on.
Now
all of a sudden, how the police know in the nighttime? They see someone that fits that description. Well, they supposed to investigate.
Well, let me say this, St. Louis, right quick before we leave. I've done a lot of work with police departments, with training and what have you. And one of the things that they've discovered in the last 15, 20 years is that the hoodie is a disguise, and it's a it serves as a defense mechanism in court to say, well, you can't prove it was me because I had on and everybody wear hoodies. You understand? A lot of people have gotten off on reasonable doubt because they just couldn't prove that it was them. When they saw them. And so criminals use that and they diffuse themselves, infuse themselves among the general public and what have you so that they can have a criminal defense, basically. And, it is what it is.
And, you know, another thing, too, that hurts. What's your largest investment asset for you, Dockery, and your family? What is your largest investment asset?
I guess I would argue my property.
There you go. It's your home.
Yeah.
Now, you don't live where you are. You don't keep it nice and tidy, clean, maintenance. You had a nice school district, okay, because your kids see that you do what you're doing to keep up the value of your property.
Right.
Now,
okay,
when these others come in, these other blacks come in and do the things that they doing into a black community. Plus they blend in. And they cause all these problems.
Okay.
Then your school start going down and having all sort of disruptions because of these kids are coming from homes where they're not taught to comply. They don't comply. What happens to your greatest investment?
Well, oftentimes,
it deteriorates in value.
Okay. Those are factors. And MLS.
That's the investment that at some point in the future, you was going to either sell and disperse the proceeds amongst your children or give them to your children. But now, based on these other elements that have destroyed and helped to deteriorate your major investment, you can't do that. And everybody always talking about the disparity in wealth between blacks and whites and others. Well, guess who's helping to contribute to that?
Well, we have some issues that we have to work on. Absolutely. And
well, you can work on them. I'm leaving.
And much of this exists in urban America. So, and we, you know, that, but that's, your point is well taken. Your point is well taken. I hate the caller left us there, but we're glad that he shared his viewpoint here. We're going to wrap up our conversation. Don, you have anything you want to say before we get out of here, man? Don, going once. Going twice. What about? You there, Don?
Yeah, I'm right here.
Okay, we're going to wrap up, man. A final thought before we get out of here.
Yeah, only thing I can tell people, prepare yourself. Be productive citizen.
That's it right there, man. That's it right there, Don. I mean, if you do that, I don't see why you can't have some success myself. What about it, St. Louis?
Good point. Same thing. All right, well, I'll check you next time.
All right, gentlemen, we appreciate you guys, and we're going to wrap up our conversation.
Make two peach cobblers.
You ain't getting none of mine, St. Louis. You can't have none of my feet covered. We appreciate both Brother Don and St. Louis for joining us here tonight on Talk Straight. We were talking from the general topic, when the last laugh is on me. I would only admonish you not to let it be on you. It's okay sometimes for us to laugh at ourselves, but position yourself to where you can control that. All right? This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. You're listening to Talk Straight, and we're going to wrap up yet another episode and conversation here and bring it to a close Thursday night, this coming Thursday night. I anticipate that Mr. Shelton will be facilitating another conversation on Talk Straight on Thursday night. As you know, those of you that have been following us, he's been sitting in for us there on Thursday nights, and we look forward to him bringing another dialogue there right here on Talk Straight, blogtalkradio.com, and he'll be doing some promotion, and perhaps we'll promote it on BFC Institute Facebook page as well. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you on next Tuesday for another episode of Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery, and we wish Pastor Waller to continue to get well there. All right.
Right. You say you ain't thinking about time?
No.
Before you do anything, right? Take this. Everybody plays a role sometimes. But no exception to the rule. Listen, baby, you pay me back.
Listen, baby.